Welcome everyone to this session on the investigation of life insurer efficiency in Canada. Let me introduce myself. I'm Agnes Fromcombe, KPMG Actuaries, and I'll be the chair for this session. We're honored today to have Mr. Bill Wise presenting to us this PhD thesis on the efficiency of life insurer efficiency in Canada. Just a little intro on Bill. Bill is currently a PhD student at the UNSW. He's doing his PhD thesis on efficiency of life insurer, starting to look at Canada, and next would be Australia and ending with USA. So that should be some interesting outcomes there that we'll all look forward to reading. It is a co-author, Sechi, who's a lecturer at the UNSW, who's an apology today. The way we'll structure this session is Bill will start with a presentation, and they'll open up to the floor for questions and some good discussions. To facilitate the session as efficient as possible, we hope to limit the comments and questions to 2 minutes each, and we encourage everyone to voice your opinions and comments. So without holding anyone up, I'll pass it on to Bill to kick off his presentation. Thank you, Bill.
Okay, thank you very much, Agnes. So the beginning of the thesis is investigation of life insurer efficiency in Canada. So what we're doing is we're exploring the efficiency of Canadian life insurers. So it's basically a two-step process. First, determine the inefficiencies, and then look at how those inefficiencies and exogenous variables explain ROE in the companies. So we're using OSFI return data. OSFI is like the government, Canadian government regulator. And I'm doing it by entire company and by line of business. So to do it, we're using what's called stochastic frontier analysis. So those are the basic forms of stochastic frontier analysis. The FX beta is the functional form. So the beta values are estimated. The E to the VI is noise in measurement, and E to the UI is the actual inefficiency scores. So the basic functional form I'm using is the translog function, which is that's your basic translog function. And specifically for this, we're using this specific equation, but I won't go through it, but that's just what it is. And then to figure out how efficient the company is, we use this equation. Basically what we're doing is comparing each company to the most efficient company. So pi there is profit, x and y are inputs and outputs. S is exogenous variables, which we'll get to, and max refers to the most efficient company. So basically, we're calculating it so that each company is compared to the most efficient company, with everybody using the same inputs, outputs that company I uses for this comparison. So that's a key point to remember when we get to it later on. So previously, I talked about that was time invariant. For time varying efficiency, we use this enhancement. And what I did is I normalized the time varying inefficiency to the time invariant scores. Actually, when I didn't do that, I get time varying efficiency to be even more influential on ROE than when I did this. So it doesn't make any real difference to the results whether I do this normalization or not. Okay. So for the inputs and outputs that we use, I'm saying that an output is a entity that a company is trying to produce. So here I'm going to be using premiums and net investment income and other revenue. Okay, these are all quantities on the OSFI returns, so these are what I'm using. Then for inputs, I'm using values that company used to try to keep a company viable. So, for example, commissions and change in policy liabilities, other interest expense, et cetera, et cetera. There is a question as to things like claims and annuity payments and other payments as to whether they should be put into the, as counted as inputs. So I'm doing cases both where I include them as inputs and when I don't include them in inputs and see what happens. And I'm making the calculations net of reinsurance, because that can be controlled by the company, I'm saying. You know, a company can decide how much reinsurance they want and how much it's going to cost, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm also doing a gross of income tax because I'm going to say that that's not really controllable by the company. So we'll do everything gross of income tax. Okay, so the second step then is to determine how efficiency influences the ROE of the company, and also how these exogenous variables influence the ROE, like year of operation, asset size, debt ratio, percent of new business written, 10-year government bond yields, and whether the company is domestic or foreign. So how do all of these affect ROE? That's what we're going to look at and compare each of them. And for that, I use this regression equation. That's to do generalized least squares. And I also did it MLE, maximum likelihood estimation. Okay, so I did an analysis for both entire companies. I also did it for lines of business. And the OSFI returns show 10 lines of business. These are the two OSFI returns I use, OSFI 54, which are domestically owned companies. OSFI 55 is foreign owned. And these are the 10 lines of business on the returns, you know, individual, life, par and non-par, group life, par and non-par, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the 10 lines of business. Okay, so the first case is what I call the base case. So we'll look at profit and efficiency for the base case. And the base case is when we include the claims and the annuity payments and the other payments as inputs. And I'm not excluding companies. I'll get to the excluding companies. I'll explain that later. Case two will be excluding those items as inputs. And as it turns out, it works better when I do case three, when I exclude specific companies. Which it, the same as case two, only excludes specific companies. I'll describe why I'm doing that. Okay. So it turns out, for the GLS time invariant base case for profit and efficiency, the effect of ROE of inefficiency and the exogenous variables is shown on table 5.4 in the paper, which is that. You can see it in the paper. So what's the summary of that table? We see that the profit inefficiency parameter is 87% of the sum of all the parameters. And the beta inefficiency estimated is minus 3.55. And because the average profit inefficiency that I calculated is 6.32% for this case, and the average, that means the average decrease in ROE is 2.24%. And for these particular company year examples, the current average ROE is 12.76. So that means it cuts potential ROE by 15%. So that's saying inefficiency cut ROE by 15%. And when those are average values, when I look at individual company year values, I get an average decrease of 16.9%. And 62.7% of the individual ones are greater than 10%. So I'm saying that the effect of profit inefficiency is large on ROE. Okay. Now, for case two, which is where I exclude the inputs of claims, annuity payments, et cetera, I get a beta inefficiency estimate that's statistically insignificant. You know, it's like 20%, 30%. So that's saying, you know, we don't know really whether it's positive or negative. So I tried excluding one company to see what would happen, the most efficient, and that's two most efficient companies. And then I wound up excluding the three most efficiency companies, and I did get a beta inefficiency score that was, estimate that was statistically significant. So I'm saying it's okay to exclude these three companies because it's as if they didn't exist in the first place. So for this case, you get similar results to before. And it turns out that, you know, you cut the potential in ROE by 38%. So again, it's saying that profit inefficiency is important when you consider how it affects the ROE. Okay, so that was time invariant. Then when I go to time varying, again, I get same type of results. I cut the potential ROE by 11%. when I do time varying, case three, I cut potential ROE by 28, and then MLE, time invariant, that's the one I did, cuts potential ROE by 15%. So basically, my point is that profit and efficiency is important when considering how it affects ROE. So this is just a quick summary. Get decreases of 15%, 38.6%, 11.6%, and 28% for all these cases. I also did cost and efficiency. That's slightly different than profit and efficiency. And I get same similar type results. I get decreases in ROE between 12% and 20%. So this is just a quick summary of the betas that I came out. You see for case two, I got beta inefficiency score of plus 0.006, but it's not statistically significant, so that's why I deleted the three companies to get one that is. I mean, the reason that case two isn't is because the ROE scores wind up being too close to, I mean, the inefficiency scores wind up being too close together to really show how they would affect ROE. And the only complication is that in cost and efficiency, the base case worked out well for both time invariant and time varying. But when I tried the trick of excluding the most efficient companies for case three, I got a beta inefficiency score that was positive. So it seems to make no sense at all. So what I did is I put back claims and inputs, et cetera, claims, et cetera, as inputs, and I got a beta inefficiency score that was negative and both significant. And same with time varying. So what I'm saying is that kind of questions whether we should be excluding claims, et cetera, as inputs, at least for the Canadian data. When I do the second part of my thesis, I'll see how it works for Australian and USA data. And it also seems to indicate that profit and efficiency is better behaved than cost and efficiency in a study like this. And there's been some papers where that's what the authors say. It's better to use profit than cost for this reason and that reason. So, again, this kind of shows that that's probably the case. And then for line of business, individual cuts, individual decreases in ROE, half or three-quarter of them are greater than 10%. Okay, so now comes some important things. So how do we, what are the conclusions from all this? These first two slides basically tell us that when you look at base case and case four, in other words, including the claims, et cetera, as inputs, you get consistent profit and efficiency scores. But when you exclude them, you don't. You get 46% for profit, 16% for cost. So again, this seems to say don't exclude these items as inputs. And for the line of business, really what this is saying is that suggests a fundamental difference between ANS and non-ANS business. Okay. So for the base case, profit and efficiency, we get an average decrease in ROE of 2.24%, right? So now let's look at how do we have to change each of the exogenous variables and inefficiency to, say, increase ROE by 1%, say from 10% to 11%, okay? So when you use the parameter estimates from the regression run for this one, we see that to increase ROE 1%, you have to decrease asset size by 96%. And even using the 95% confidence interval, the endpoint of that, it's still 74.6%. So that's clearly impossible. You can't decrease your asset size by that much. When you look at debt ratio, to increase ROE by 1%, you must have to decrease debt ratio by 29.5%. But the average debt ratio is only 2.56%. And even using the 95% confidence interval, you get a value that's impossible, okay? So what this is saying is you can't use debt ratio to try to increase your ROE, or it's not very easy. And even when you look at percent of new business written, even using the 95% confidence interval point, it's difficult. So what I'm saying is that it's hard if you're going to use debt ratio or percent new business written or try to change your size of your company. It's hard to change ROE significantly. And so those results are summarized in this table. And even if you look at government bond yields, you know, to change ROE by 1% using the parameter estimate, they have to increase by 6.77%. But the average change for the 5 years is only 2.70%. So basically, that's not going to happen. And if we recall from equation two, the calculations compare companies when they use identical sets of inputs and outputs. So what I'm saying is that if you want to increase ROE by 1%, you need to decrease your inefficiency by 2.8% using the parameter estimate. And that seems to be easy to do, given that the average inefficiency is 6.3%. Remember, the calculations assume everybody's using all the same parameters. So it seems possible to be able to do that. So I'm saying that changing inefficiency is easiest and quite possibly the only way to increase ROE, as opposed to the changing debt ratio, percent new business, or size of the company. And then for all these other cases, you get the same sorts of results. You know, average inefficiency is 29.9%. To increase ROE by 1%, you need to decrease inefficiency by 3.5%. So it seems easy. And then the same thing with this one, same thing with this one. You know, they all basically come out to the same. Even with the cost inefficiency results, you know, for the base case, average inefficiency is 6.3%. To increase ROE by 1%, you need to decrease inefficiency by 2.7%. So again, it looks like it's possible, and all the other ones became, all the other parameters or exogenous variables from the parameter estimates, they look either impossible or really, really difficult to do. So what kind of conclusions can I come to? I should mention that also for the line of business results, they're not in the paper, although I've done them now. The same results come out. I compared increasing ROE by 10% versus 1%. And whereas some of the changing some of the exogenous variables by, let's say, debt ratio or asset size, it might only say 10% increase in asset size to increase ROE by 10%, say, which seems easy enough to do, except that in all these cases, changing inefficiency is way, way easier because it might be an average inefficiency of 39%. But the parameter tells us that it's a 0.025% change that's necessary to increase ROE by 10%. So, I mean, even if you can do it using the other exogenous variables, using inefficiency is way, way easier. At least this is what the results are saying. So the basic conclusions are that inefficiency has decreased the ROE by life insurers by between 11% and 38%. Of its potential, depending on the exact type of measurement that you use. And even when you look at the individual company year values, large percentages of these ROEs are decreased by more than 10%. So I'm saying that a 10% increase is important. So to change ROE by even 1%, a life insurer has to change its business radically, or else it's impossible. And so changing inefficiency seems to be much easier and maybe even the only way to try to do it. So I'm hoping that this research adds to information concerning expenses and inefficiency in life insurance and also adds to the knowledge of a regulating life insurance and determining warning signs concerning viability. So, for example, regulators might think about using inefficiency in their determining of how companies are doing rather than just expenses or expense ratio, something like that. And as I mentioned, most economists would say, efficiency is considered to be more accurate than items like expense ratios. So if you use efficiency, it can be an improvement on existing methods because it's more accurate. And hopefully this research might be able to determine best inputs and outputs to use for future studies and hopefully help insurers know which areas to concentrate on when making management decisions that might affect expenses or similar concepts. And the last quote there is Bawi et al. Says, the difficulty with the computational tool is not a good reason to dismiss the model. So basically what they're saying is that just because efficiency might be more difficult to use, maybe it's a better thing to use. So we can hope that this might be deemed to be both desirable and necessary. Okay, so and does anybody have any questions or comments about this?
So I now take questions from the floor.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Guy Thorburn. I'd just be interested in if you could articulate a little bit for us, or for me anyway, on the structure of the life insurance industry in Canada and whether all these companies are similar. And you've indicated that decreasing your capital base makes it difficult. There's only so much you can go in increasing your return on equity. So
yeah.
Is that a reflection on the way capital is regulated and the regulation in the Canadian market? So I guess a couple of questions there. One is a little bit of an outline of the Canadian market and whether we're looking at a whole range of different companies or a bunch of which are fairly similar, and a comment on whether the regulation of the Canadian market has the effect of pretty much prescribing the capital that means it's difficult. There's only so much you can do in reducing your capital base to increase ROE.
Well, I'm using basically all Canadian life insurers that are allowed to issue life insurance, and that includes both domestic and foreign owned companies. And yes, there's a large range. There's little small ones and large ones, ones that only issue two or three lines of business, ones that issue all of the lines of business, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, there's a large range of them. I don't know whether Canadian rules with respect to regulation would have anything to do with whether it's easier or harder to change asset size to change ROE enough. I'm just saying that, for example, the one that I mentioned, if decrease ROE by 73% or whatever, or 96%. I mean, like, obviously a company can't do that, right? I mean, that's like almost going out of business. So I don't know whether the regulation has any true effect on that. It's just that I'm just saying that's really hard to do, and changing efficiency is a lot easier to do.
Thanks. My name's Paul Miller from AMP. I just got a few questions. The first one is concerning those two companies you excluded. Can you tell us anything about those companies? Were they large? Were they small? Why were they super efficient? Or do you just have a sort of confidential list and you only know them as company A? Or?
Oh, no, I know which company is which. I mean, all this data is free on the internet. I don't know offhand which companies, what the sizes of the companies are. Yeah, they were all foreign-owned. The reason I excluded them is, like I said, is they were the most efficient companies. And if I include them in, like even when I first determined the overall efficiency scores, there are several cases where I excluded one or two companies even then, before doing the second step of going to ROE determination. Because, for example, I might include a company and it's so super efficient that everybody else is 70% inefficient. So I'm saying there's something wrong with that. That can't be the case. So I would just exclude that company, or exclude the specific company year value that, like, I call it an outlier, right? So it makes the results nonsensical, so I exclude it. So when I exclude the three companies to try to get ROE or inefficiency scores that are varying enough to be able to determine how they affect ROE, that's the reason I do it. I exclude the three most efficient companies, and then the rest of the, like, if I include them, they're all like 26.3%, 26.4%, 26.3%. They're all too close. You can't really tell how efficiency affects ROE. So I exclude the three most, and then the range becomes a lot larger, I mean, or more disparate, right? you know, 8%, 10%, 12%, 15%. So now I have a set of data that actually I can determine, use to determine how these things affect ROE. So that's the reason I did it. And no, I couldn't tell you offhand exactly which companies I excluded and what their characteristics are. But the reason was is because they were the most efficient ones and they compressed all the other ones too close together. So take them away and the scores become more disparate.
Yeah, I suppose for future reference, it'd be just nice to know what percentage of the market they are. Like, you know, if it's two really big companies and you're excluding sort of 20% of the market, or if it's two really small companies and it's a really trivial amount. But that's just a comment from me. Can I just go on and ask another question? I might have read this, but when you're measuring it against expenses, what's your definition? Are you using a cost ratio for you know, comparing the most efficient company to the least efficient company, or is it how are you defining expenses there?
Well, it's all the data from the OSFI returns. Is that what you're asking me? I'm not sure what you're asking exactly. Are you asking about like the actual formula that I use? I can show you that. When we get to it. This formula. Is this what you're asking? I'm not sure whether that's what you're asking. Like this is the formula. This is like the translog function that I'm using to calculate actual efficiency. And it's got like numerators and I've got thetas in there because I'm taking natural logs to make everything positive and I'm taking the natural logs of, et cetera, et cetera. So expenses is like one of the inputs. I'm calling it one of the inputs.
But you do that for profit, but don't you also go on to do that for expenses?
Oh, you mean cost and efficiency?
Cost and efficiency, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the same equation, only just the left-hand side, this dependent variable is different. Instead of using profit there, I use cost.
So is that dollar amount of cost that you're using, or is it a sort of cost ratio?
It's a cost. It's a dollar amount of cost and then divided by the appropriate numerator. Because the translog function uses a numerator.
Right.
Basically, the numerator is there to account for inflation, account for large and small companies, like try to take away stochastic variances and things like that, try to account for heterogeneous results or heterogeneous companies and things like that. It's a standard thing to do in the translog.
So things like size of company would get reflected in that numerator?
Yeah, that's natural log of asset size, yeah. That's there. Yeah, that's to account for stochastic variation due to size of the company, yeah. Yeah, that's standard to do that.
Hi, Bill. It's Trang Duncanson from Deloitte. I just wondered, it might be just me, is there any way you can put that into words, how you define inefficiency?
Sure. Well, okay, it's easier to start with this one. First, I take... This is the efficiency of the company that I'm considering. Company I, and the denominator has efficiency of the max most efficient company. So when I do an inefficiency for that particular company, I compare how, like this is the way it's done. I mean, you wind up with a company that's defined to be most efficient, so its inefficiency is zero. And everybody else is compared to that. Okay, so it's basically this ratio comes along to be the profit and efficiency ratio. Okay. Do you understand what I mean? I mean, like, take the most efficient company, compare everybody else to it. If it's 10% not as efficient, its inefficiency is 10%, sort of thing. And then this other equation, this is like the translog. So I have here, Like, for example, this represents if I'm doing profit inefficiency, this represents profit. And then these other variables, like the X's are the inputs, and the Y's are the X's are the outputs, Y's are the inputs. And then these other, like, cross variables, they're like, this is the way the translog function works. You use the inputs crossed with other inputs, and outputs crossed with other outputs, and inputs crossed with outputs. And then these two last terms are explain V represents noise in measurement, and U represents the inefficiency itself. Yeah, so this is like a company by company or company year by company year calculation. So I come up with those values. And then to compare company to company, I take basically the overall score from this company versus the overall score from the most efficient one and calculate that, and that gives the efficiency score for that particular company.
Bill, can you explain the concept of efficiency in that formula?
Yeah, efficiency is like how well does a company take its inputs and create outputs from it. That's basic economic definition. So like you take inputs like what I'm using are things like commissions and dividends and expenses, et cetera, et cetera. How well does the company take those values and create the outputs from them, like premiums and investment income? So that's the basic idea. And then when I determine that each company's inefficiency itself, I take this ratio. And that shows us how efficient company I is to the most efficient company.
Richard Weatherhead, just taking the discussion a little bit further, presumably, and you hinted at this before, you get to the stage where we've got the overall formula there, so the most efficient company gets 100, and then there's a range down from 100 down to 0. Does that mean that, so essentially what we're saying is that that'll reflect efficiency relative to the rest of the Canadian market, and presumably you hinted at some investigations you're going to be doing in Australia and other countries as well. Would you then move to more of an international comparison? Because ultimately, presumably, you could then do some work that said, generally speaking, the Australian market is more or less efficient or gets a score of 50 versus 99.
Right, I understand. That may be possible. I'm not planning to do that for the thesis. The only problem is data differences, right? Like, this data I got from OSFI, from the net, it's free on the net. The data for Australia, we bought it from APRA. So it's not really going to be the same. It's going to have different values. It may not have I haven't actually looked at it. But it may not have premiums and investment income and other revenue in exactly the same way. So unless you get data that's actually compatible like that, it's really hard to do a comparison one market to another market. All I can really, the best thing I can do probably is compare Australian companies to each other. But really the gist of the thesis is that, at least so far, is that efficiency is the best way to influence your ROE. Like asset size and debt ratio and percent new business written isn't really going to do it. So. You know, when I do the Australian data, hopefully that's the same sort of conclusion I can come up with.
Sorry, I'm monopolizing the microphone, I'm afraid. Just an interesting conversation. So that means, so if I was on a board and I've got a report and it basically said that, it might actually say, well, actually overall efficiency, you're at 98, but when you look at your efficiency score for costs, you're actually down at 50, and you managed to get to 98 because you were so good in all the other areas, and because it's a generalized model, are all those factors is your efficiency overall is reflecting all the things like costs, as you said, and claims in some cases. So is that the sort of advice that we'd be giving with a measure like this? We'd be saying, well, actually, of all the range of measures to actually get that efficiency gain, in my example, it would be costs you'd be looking at, or whatever it was that got the lowest efficiency score.
What I did, like when you look at this formula, when I take all of the inputs and outputs, like premiums and general expenses and dividends and commissions, et cetera, I do generate values that show, like, if premiums go up, how much does efficiency go up? If commissions go up, how much does efficiency go down? Or now, because this is kind of a complicated formula, not all of the parameters actually make 100% sense. Like, I've come up with a few where it'll say something like, the more investment income you have, the less profit and efficiency you have. But in the vast, vast majority of cases, those nonsensical or values that go against what you think it might be are statistically insignificant, say like less than 10%. So that means it could have just as easily been positive as negative, sort of thing. But I have basically found that the majority of the individual output and input parameters, like here and here, do make sense. And, you know, like premiums, it says premiums go up, efficiency goes up. And the significance might be 8%. So it's saying it's probably that's the case. So is that the question you're asking? Like, I can, in the paper I showed one or two of those tables. I mean, I can obviously show anybody who wants all of the tables if they want, but that would make the paper very, very long, so I just put a couple of them in there.
I'd like to ask a more, I guess, practical question. So what are the implications of these results on the regulator and, I guess, for companies?
Well, I'd say that for regulators, what this is saying, and what most of the economists say, is that efficiency is a better value or better concept to use than just something simpler like expense ratios. And so, you know, like I had in the quote, just because something is difficult to use isn't necessarily a good reason not to use it. So these results would seem to indicate that maybe regulators should start looking at efficiency scores to determine whether companies might be viable or profitable in the future. And for companies, these results say that, like I've said, changing asset size, changing debt ratio, hoping that government bond yields change, et cetera, won't really gain very much for ROE. And really the only good way to do it is improving your efficiency. That's what these results say. It'll be interesting to see what happens for Australia or the U.S. when I get around to doing U.S. data.
So how can a company actually use these results, Bill?
Well, hopefully, I guess a company would have to determine its own method for determining its efficiency. And then say to themselves, well, like specifically when I do Australian data, if the Australian data comes out similar, don't change this, don't change that, look at the efficiency, and that will help us improve our company more than the other exogenous variables.
I think I heard you say you've been doing this ratio for an individual company over time. Does it bounce around much from year to year for a company, or are they sort of stuck in their ways?
Oh, that's a good question. Some of each. Some of each. Some companies seem to be inefficient to the same degree for most years. But some companies do, yeah, bounce around a little bit. Now, see, part of that is can be attributable to maybe the policy liabilities were changed a lot 1 year to make up for the previous year or something of that nature, you know what I'm saying? That actually, that seems to be a prevalent cause of that sort of thing from what when I've looked at it. But that's why the time invariant inefficiency scores uses averages. Like I got 5 years, so the idea is to use the average inefficiency over the 5 years, and that gives a total inefficiency for that company. So even if they do bounce around a bit, I'm still using an average.
Just following on that point, just kind of want to understand time variant efficiency compared to time invariant efficiency. Because what do they kind of mean in simple English?
Time invariant inefficiency is an average inefficiency score over the 5 years that I'm using, or average over the number of years that you use. For time varying, yeah, what I did is, one of the authors say that in order to determine how these exogenous variables affect efficiency, this is the way you have to do it. You have to basically add them into the translog equation. And so these W values here are like the debt ratio, year of business, and percent new business written, et cetera, et cetera. So when I do that, I get time-varying efficiency scores. Now I can either, well, like I wrote here, I normalize them to the time invariant so that the average of the time-varying inefficiency averages out to the time invariant score. But it's, you don't have to do that. And like I say, when I didn't do that, I got a beta inefficiency parameter estimate that was more negative than when I didn't, I mean, than when I did do it. So if anything, that would say that inefficiency is more of an influence on ROE. Yeah. So the time varying, basically, instead of having an average over the 5 years, is like each individual year for each company gets its own inefficiency score.
I was just going to make a problem that I think it's a bit more problematic applying it to Australian data, because the sort of wealth management businesses in Australia sort of sometimes only write part of their business through life insurance, and I think you're going to life insurance data. So what you've got is some companies might be selling virtually all their superannuation new business through unit trusts rather than through life insurance, whereas others will be selling it through life insurance. And I think that's probably going to give you issues with the completeness of the data you get. And obviously, you can only work with the data that you can get. So I just thought I'd mention that anyway.
Okay. Thank you for the warning. Yeah. Like, the data is all by, from what I can tell, stat fund. So I'll... what I'll have to do is... Well, I mean, I had to do that with the Canadian data, too. I had to compare... At times, there are cases where I had to compare what exact data I had and how does it compare with data I got from the other companies. And I did have to make some adjustments there, so I'll do the same thing for Australian data when it comes along. Yeah.
So what sort of adjustments are you sort of talking about? You're sort of saying...
You're saying that you go to other sources and you find that there's more to the company than is in the statutory... In these returns, and you're sort of adjusting those companies up, are you, in some way? Or
No, I'm just using the OSFI data, but I'm just saying adjusting the data, not getting more data, but just adjusting the data that I have to make it more compatible and comparable to other companies, that's all. Like, there are some cases where I had to do that. Especially when I started working with lines of business, there were cases, you know, there's always going to be cases where data is like nonsensical, right? So I had to either eliminate it or try to adjust it logically or something of that nature, yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Right. I think there has been some very good discussions in the room, so I'd like to thank everyone for their contribution and good thinking. Especially I'd like to thank Bill for an excellent paper and excellent presentation. On behalf of the Institute and everyone in the room, I'd like to present you with a little token of appreciation.